Welcome. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Here on The Deep State, we go deep into stories that the mainstream media doesn't want you to know. The Deep State imprisoned me once upon a time. Well, now we're going after the Deep State. I want to bring on Julian Dorey. Julian has been one of the best podcasts out there, and I have to say it was one of my favorite to appear on recently. Julian, I'm proud to call a friend. Julian, welcome to the show. Julian, moving on, it seems like in the news these days, it's Iran, Iran, Iran all the time. This is, I think you and I both agree, this is one of those manufactured crises. I've been debating a lot of people, a lot of like important people who think that I'm dead wrong, that this was an Israeli decision, and that the United States was either duped, you know, tricked, convinced to enter in on the side of the Israelis and do Israel's dirty work for it. We'll get to that in a minute. But you have connected rising tensions with Iran to broader global power structures. What do you think is really the driving force behind this war?
I do my best to go off of what people quite literally tell us with their words and their actions. Because I'm not in these rooms. I don't know these people. I don't have the sourcing that some of these journalists online have. It was ironic, right when the war broke out, that was like my greatest sourcing time of all time. I had you and a couple other people that I didn't bring public who were spot the fuck on that this was happening and why it was happening and what was going on in that room. So shout out to you.
Hey,
you caught some shit for that. But
I did.
You know, like that was like a... That was one moment where I was like, wow, we really got something here, you know?
Well, yeah, I'll tell but you, when, let me interrupt you for one second.
Yeah.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, I came on your show and I predicted that the U.S. would attack Iran, that the U.S. and Israel would attack Iran. And what I said was two things. Number one, people with access to the White House told me that the president had made a decision to attack Iran and that there were battle lines, that the anti-war faction was the vice president, the director of national intelligence, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which was consistent with what happened 23 years earlier when we made a decision to attack Iraq, right? Mm-hmm. And then people jumped all over me, and they said, oh, we're supposed to believe that people with security clearances and access to the White House are just going to walk up to John Kiriakou, a convicted criminal leaker, and they're going to volunteer classified information. Yes, that's what we want you to believe, because that's what happens literally every single day. I'm not a moron. There are a lot of people who trust my judgment in Washington, and yes, some of them have security clearances and access to the White House. Another thing that I said on your show that day was, if there was one important lesson I learned at the CIA, is that if you want to understand American war planning, watch the movement of naval assets. Mm-hmm. If we send an aircraft carrier strike force, that's a strong message. If we send two or more, we're going to war. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so and some more color there, by the way, because again, this was very different from, you know, there's been a few stories that accidentally get broken on my show, and afterwards I'm like, oh wow, you know, this was a first. So, because you do a lot of interviews and stuff, and you're always all over the place, so I'm gonna take you back to when you came here, because it was literally right before, but you walked in the door, you know, after driving up, sitting in a lot of traffic, and you're like, God damn it, we're going to Iran. And I was like, what? You're like, yeah, no, I got this is f***ed up. And we start talking about it, and then I'm like, damn, it's crazy, we can't talk about that. And you're like, I'm doing it. I'm like, on air? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah,
and I'm
let's
like,
do it.
All right, we'll save that for the end, let's do it. But then you and I, off the record, talked about, like, your sourcing and all that, and the thing... By the time you had gotten to me, the thing that you were shocked about was that anti-war faction, which had consistently, we weren't breaking news on this respect, it had consistently seemed to, based on previous reporting by the people, consisted of exactly what you said, Gabbard, Vance, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. By this time, your guy was like, yeah, they got the Joint Chiefs aren't like crazy, but like they're now on board with it. And the only holdouts were Vance and Gabbard, which that to me, like when I was thinking about it afterwards, I'm like, okay, so these guys were totally against this for the longest time. And now they're on board, which tells me they're not on board at all. They've just been pressured into doing this by, and now I'd speculate, by other people who are not on that, but let's say around those conversations. And who are those people? Because then that's exactly what happened, you know?
That's right.
And we saw these people go. And you know what? There was this side point. There was one part of your report, and I remember telling you this, where I'm like, I don't think that part's going to happen, because we were recording on a Friday. We ended up going into Iran, a Friday evening. We ended up going into Iran basically almost exactly a week later.
Yes.
In the middle of the night, Friday, Saturday, right?
Yep.
And one part of your report was that they said they were going to do it on Monday or Tuesday.
4 days. That's
and I'm
right.
I'm thinking they're not going to do that because the State of the Union's happening. I don't think you would do that before that. However, you might have actually, and this is pure spec, we'll never know. You might have even gotten that right, if not for the fact that the same time we were recording, when we got out of the recording, Tucker dropped that interview with Mike Huckabee where he very casually said, yeah, Israel can have the whole Middle East as far as I'm concerned, which caused a diplomatic crisis in the whole Middle East.
Yes,
and might have delayed any planning. So I don't know, but I was blown away by the flip of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So to get back to your original question, as far as like what is causing this, again, I told you, I look at actions and words that we all can see, open source intel. And when you have on the same day, separate, and I saw these in context, separate admissions of the Speaker of the House, who's a very weak guy.
Yes.
And Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, saying that the United States decided to attack because they knew Israel was going, is an admission that Israel was taking this into their own hands. Now, here's the contrary point to that as well, which doesn't change the overall symbolism here, but Israel has reportedly, according to other administration officials, believe them or not, I don't know, in the past, threatened this many times with presidents, like, well, if you don't do it, we're going to go.
Many
and presidents
times.
Always said, knock yourself out.
Yes.
And then they never went. So maybe this is the first time they were able to bluff their way into it. I don't know. But when I see that, and then I see what that government is doing under the cover of this war. Now, as we're talking, they're supposedly getting to a 10-day ceasefire with Lebanon, which I'm very much rooting for. I hope that is the case. But like, we watched the defense minister, Katz, and the finance minister, Smotrich, who's a nut job. We talked about him forever.
Dangerous. Yes.
Openly discussed the minute they went and attacked Lebanon under the guise of this whole Iran chaos, openly discussed seizing the land up to the Litani River and never giving it back. And then they even went to the Druze and the Christians in the area and gave them a heads up, which is cool. Cool, and said like, hey, you know, maybe you can come back and say cool. If not for the fact that it was them telling them, by the way, the majority population, the Shiites, if you know where they are, tell us, because we're getting them the And I just say, I'm like, you know, you and I have talked about before, a minority amount of people in Israel voted for this government because there's so many parties over there.
A small minority. Yeah.
Right. And they almost had a civil war right before October 7th because people were in the streets. So a lot of people don't support this. But like, when you see what the current government is doing, you cannot help but think there, like, it's not a lot different from what Hitler did taking land. It's very, very parallel. Replace the word Shiites with Jews and replace the Israeli government with Germany. And you are seeing some of the same themes. Get out of this land. This is ours now. You know, we're expelling you from it. And like, yeah, like if they want to take out some Hezbollah guys, fine. But you and I both know, you've said it before, you put it beautifully. It's like, they'll take out a whole city block to get one guy.
Yeah, they will.
And you think this isn't going to cause bad PR? I don't think that's the case. I think they just, I think the guys in power just don't care. And so I've said forever, I'm like, I'm a common sense thinker. I've always called for regime change in Iran, just not forced regime change. That's I'm calling right. for the people there to rise up and handle it because I feel bad for them. They've lived under a horrible regime for 47 years. Mm-hmm. You know, the same thing in Israel. Vote these guys out.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like, I get rid of them.
I went back and looked. You and I talked about this. Benjamin Netanyahu has never won more than 27% in an Israeli election. He's the longest serving Israeli prime minister in history. And he's never won more than 27% because there are many political parties in Israel. This is not just a minority government, but it's a small minority government. And yet he carries so much authority in the United States. George Galloway, the British parliamentarian, commented last week, said something that was so funny. Funny because it was true. There were rumors that Netanyahu was dead. Netanyahu was hiding in Germany. Netanyahu was hiding in Cyprus. He was hiding in a bunker somewhere in Israel. And George Galloway said, Netanyahu's missing. Who's running the United States? It's leaderless.
Yeah. This is the thing. If any other leader in the world shit on Trump the way that Benjamin Netanyahu puckers up and shits on Trump's face over and over again, he would be throwing a fit online. He would cut off all trade. He would tariff the shit out of that country. He might be wild enough to declare war.
Yeah.
Yet over and over and over and over again, these guys referring to Israel's government, defy the American wishes and demonstrate that they have no interest in peace. You know, you saw that March 23rd True Social on that Monday morning from Trump talking about agreeing to a ceasefire. Let me correct that. Agreeing to a ramping down in some hostilities. It was not a ceasefire with Iran. And at the time it was, I'm trying to remember, maybe it was 5 days or something like that. And he specifically referred to their energy infrastructure and one other type of infrastructure related to that. Within the hour, the Israeli Air Force tweeted out, we have begun a brand new round of campaigns specifically at what infrastructure, which doesn't mean energy infrastructure, but then go look at the timeline and look at the shit they blew up. They blew up energy infrastructure.
Yes, they
blew up a gas pipeline and shit like that.
That was an open palm smack across the face of Donald Trump. Yeah.
So you have to ask yourself, why do they have that kind of power over him? This is a small nation.
Yeah.
They should never have that kind of influence over a leader like ours. And I would say that about any country, and I have.
Yes, you're exactly right. So I think you and I are both of the agreement or of the position that this is going to have to be resolved through diplomacy. Whether the Iranian government survives or not, I personally believe that it will survive, but diplomats are going to have to settle this thing. So how does the U.S. balance deterrence and diplomacy, especially given the risks around oil routes like the Strait of Hormuz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one you'd have a lot. I mean, you have life experience with this. I don't. If I were looking at it from strictly an outside view of like power dynamics and how humans work. On the one hand, well, unfortunately now it would appear, and we don't know this for sure because there's all kinds of misinformation in any war.
Yes.
But it would appear that the very lowly supported Iranian government now at least has more support than it did on February 27th.
Yes, indeed.
All right, now whether or not that's 10% more or 5%, I don't know. But the fact is, if anything, you've just strengthened them a little bit because people are like, why the f*** are you bombing me, right?
Yeah.
So that's a problem. Secondly, I'm not going to be one of these guys who, no matter what our leaders do, I'm just going to make sure I shit on them. If Donald Trump has to go make an about face, and without him admitting it verbally, because he never will, basically admit a mistake/defeat and pull out and cut your losses and try to rebuild what you've unnecessarily torn down in the last 8 weeks, I will credit him for that, because that will be doing swallowing the pride and doing the harder thing for at least trying to salvage something. There's an old quote in poker where it's like, don't throw good money after bad.
Yes.
Just because you've put X number of chips in the pot by the time the turn gets down doesn't mean you should pay for the river.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's just a human psychology thing in life. And that's, Trump is a guy who wants to see the river card every single time. And you're just unnecessarily dealing with things. Like, I hate, John, I hate it when people put words in my mouth or take words out of my mouth. There is no one with the same brain, starting with me, in this case, who is in any way advocating for the people that run Iran or denying what they are. In fact, we don't even know the numbers of people they killed. I'll believe it. If you say it was 45,000, I'll buy it because they've done it before. Fine. I don't care. It's a subject I don't need to fight over. Like, they're bad. There are, unfortunately, though, third, fourth, fifth, and tenth order effects of things that you do.
Exactly right.
And if we wanted to be the world's police on everything, then you know what we would do, John? We would go invade China tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you noticed, they're killing the Uyghurs.
Right.
Of course you know that.
Yeah.
But why don't we do that, John? Because they have a f***ing $20 trillion GDP that we know of, allegedly.
Right.
And that's just not how the world works. Do I like that they do that? No, I hate it. Well, and they do more than that as well.
And for that
matter, you can't just walk into Iran and be like, you know what? We're going to change the regime today.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
For that matter, why don't we invade Saudi Arabia?
Exactly.
For the way they treat their people. And
exactly.
And that's not a democratic society. If we're so interested in democracy all around the world, let's invade Saudi Arabia.
Yep. Your same point. Exactly.
Yep.
And it's just the fact that people can't see that. Like, we talk about Afghanistan since the times of Alexander the Great being where empires fall because of the geography and the location.
Right.
Iran's worse. Every single part of their border is a problem. They got 92, 93 million people there.
That's right.
The people most advocating for war as of last year didn't even know what the population was there. Hello, Ted Cruz. How are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, we're talking about you, Ted Cruz.
But, like, this is – what world are we living in where Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, you know, Mark Levin, these are the people winning Trump's ear?
Yeah.
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
There's more to it. I don't buy that. Like – people love to call Trump an idiot. He's not an idiot.
He's not.
He's not.
No, and see, the Democrats.
Why is he doing idiotic things?
Yeah, the Democrats have consistently underestimated Donald Trump. He's not an idiot.
Yes.
He's very bright.
Yes.
He thinks several steps ahead, but apparently not when it comes to the Israelis. And I just don't understand the hold that Benjamin Netanyahu seems to have over him.
I don't understand it either, and there's so much of it that would just be pure speculation for me to go. Yeah. The one thing that I have said is I'm like, you know, he knew Epstein for a really long time. And that's the thing with Trump. There's still so much haziness there. He was good friends with him and everything.
Yeah.
But he's like the one guy of these powerful people where there's not one email that you can point to and be like, there it is. Like,
no.
Even some of the FBI cases and stuff that were settled, they were settled by Epstein's estate, like after the fact, which is just closing up business and everything.
Yeah.
Like, it that unfortunately doesn't mean a lot.
Yes.
Like, when I'm looking at when he was alive, where is it? Now, there's some spec emails, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, very bad guy, when he's calling Donald Trump like the worst guy he's ever known. You wonder if that's just because he hates him or because he knows ball. like I don't know.
You know, let me add something.
I'm looking into that.
Let me add something to that, too. I remember when I was in college, Ronald Reagan was the president when I was in college. And he, like every president, he had a cabinet. But he had also something called a kitchen cabinet. And this was all of his billionaire friends from California. And they would meet in Reagan's kitchen in California when he was back on the West Coast. And they would talk about policy and advise him. And so they were his informal advisors. Well, one of the members of this kitchen cabinet was one of his oldest and closest friends. His name was Bloomingdale. I think it was Alfred Bloomingdale. He was the founder of the Bloomingdale department store chain. And in 19, whatever it was, 84, 85, 86, Bloomingdale died of a heart attack. But he died of a heart attack on top of his girlfriend, with his wife sitting at home. And word got out. Well, later on, the public learned through the media that Reagan's initial go-to statement was, I barely knew that guy. We met a couple times, but he was nothing to me. And his advisors were like, everybody in the world knows that Alfred Bloomingdale, or whatever his first name was your best friend. And so the statement that they ended up coming out with was, he was my best friend. I'm sorry that he died this way. I feel sorry for his wife. What he did was wrong, but he was a good man and he was a good friend. It's like, yes, the truth shall set you free. It's as easy as that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know,
just
there's
crazy.
Like this. Like if you ever saw Veep,
right?
It's a comedy sketch of like how things are. But then you see the way things happen now and you're like, is it that much different?
Do you, fun fact, Veep ended as a show after winning 13 Emmy Awards. Do you know why? It ended because Donald Trump was elected president. And the craziness from that show turned out to be real life in the Trump administration the first term. And so it just wasn't funny anymore. And so they canceled the show.
God. Yeah. That's funny as shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Let me move
by
on.
By the way, John, John, real fast. Yes. We never came back to that third tranche of emails.
You're
I don't
want
to like leave people hanging. Should we do that real quick?
Yes, let's do that.
Yeah. So you had asked me right at the beginning, like, what we could expect from this or whatever. And the one thing we can point to with evidence is that, and that was the part of the part that left you speechless when you were here, which also, by the way, I'm glad it was wild for you because it was fucking wild for us.
It was crazy.
We were like John Kiriakou not saying anything has hell frozen over.
Yeah, I didn't know how to respond. And I even said, I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah. So part of that was the fact that when they ran the data by year of files, the chart basically is like beep, 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 beep. And the big drop off where everything's canceled is 1991 through 2001. But, you know, a lot of stuff was going on during those years.
Oh, my God. Yes. 1990.
A lot of stuff was going on.
Oh, my God.
So I want to know a lot more about that. Because Jeffrey Epstein's artwork doesn't really help with that. You know, you got Bill Clinton sitting there pointing in the blue dress. And then you got George W. Bush playing on the ground at the Oval with some falling over towers and a paper airplane like a child. And you're like, was that caricature or was that satire?
Right.
Or you know what I mean? Like what was that? So I would like to know if it's much more than that too. We have seen some of the people who I don't know if it's those files they've gotten access to. I'm talking about like Ro Khanna, Thomas Massey. I think Tim Burchett said something too. I don't know if it's the official files that haven't been released. That's a little unclear to me, but I've heard some spec commentary from them that's based, I shouldn't say spec. I've heard commentary from them that's based on things that are classified or at least were classified for a while that they saw that could point to other things that are beyond what we know. But like, I feel like that is the visual we used earlier with kind of pulling on the spring and then the whole well comes up. I feel like that third tranche is where the pool is. And I think that whatever is behind that is a civilizational, potential revolutionary type threat. It's bad enough that bread and circus and sitting on your iPhone and getting good TV shows and having the comfort of electricity and Wi-Fi and all these things we enjoy and take for granted these days isn't enough to keep you distracted enough to stay there and not walk outside. That's what might be in there.
What do you think the likelihood is then that there will be a whistleblower, that a brave member of Congress like Thomas Massey or Ro Khanna releases it into the Congressional Record as part of the speech and debate clause, that somebody leaks it to the Washington Post. What do you think the chances are that it's actually going to make its way out there? And we see what this last 3 to 3.5 million pages really is.
This is pure spec because I don't know. This is just me kind of guesstimating. But the fact that it never has tells me even now it probably never will.
Yeah.
Because it's not just about can people keep a secret, which people do at a certain level have more of an ability to do that than we give them credit for. The old excuse, and I've used it before, and I've rethought this over the past year or two, of like, well, if enough people knew about it, it was someone's going to leak it or whatever. You don't account for tying up loose ends. You don't account for all the shit that you and I would never even occur to think about to solve a problem like that from a threat perspective or something. Well, maybe you would think about it, but I never would, you know? Like, it would be just movies and that kind of stuff to me. But, you know, again, it's not a good omen when you see someone like Dan Bongino, who's got a very big microphone and has gone so hard, aggressively, angrily, the opposite way. And he sees his numbers. I mean, he's sinking like a lead balloon.
Yeah.
And, you know, yet he's still doing that every day.
Yes.
And he's a wealthy guy. Why is that? I think it's beyond what my understanding of anything could be. Is it aliens? I don't know. But it's something that people are like, nope, can't do that. And we're not gonna. And so, yeah, I feel like you said correctly, they're completely in violation of federal law right now. And they're openly going on podcasts and bragging about it.
Yeah, right.
And nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. And what are they going to do? They're going to arrest themselves? That's what it would come down to. Any member of Congress can make a referral, criminal referral, to the Justice Department saying,
that's right,
you need to arrest yourself because the law compels you to release the documents. You haven't released them, so you should arrest yourself and be prosecuted. It's never going to happen in a million years.
It's like that old New York Times headline where it's like the CIA investigated itself about crack in L.A. and found no wrongdoing. Like, I can't believe it.
Exactly.
They found nothing. I couldn't have guessed
ridiculous.
That.
Ridiculous.
You know, it's just, it's all a stage. Everyone's an actor, and we just clap along when the applause sign comes
That's
on.
That's right. Thank you very much for being with us today, Julian. We'd love to have you back in the future. Good to see you. And thank you for watching. This is the Deep State, and remember to always seek the truth where you are not allowed to seek the truth. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.